Reggae Uprising with your host, Danielle.
Greetings, Reggae Uprising podcast family, and welcome to another episode. I hope you enjoyed last week's special, the COVID-19 lockdown special 2.0. Yes, unfortunately, I had to do a second one, which I was hoping I would never have to do of that special. But, you know how things go. So I hope you enjoyed the high vibration of that episode with all of the conscious reggae music full of lyrics of empowerment, inspiration and knowledge. We're going to do something a little bit different this week as well. I'm going to do a lockdown 2.0 survival kit. So what that means is the format is completely different to our regular episodes. So my regular listeners will know that what happens is every Wednesday I have a new guest on and we talk about heritage, we talk about inspirational stories, we talk about, you know, the industry that they're in and how, you know, we can network and connect and learn from one another's experiences through life and through their professional industries and the knowledge that they've attained through them. And obviously each episode, all of my guests pick 7 reggae selections as the soundtrack to all of this wonderful knowledge. Now, with this episode, however, with the Lockdown 2.0 Survival Kit, as I've had so many great guests during the last lockdown, we had some great advice from those guests during the lockdown, after the lockdown, at different points throughout the year. So what I'm going to do for this episode is take those snippets from some of those episodes that I think would be really helpful to people in this second lockdown. But what I'm going to do, so that if you have missed out on those previous episodes, I'm going to leave the episode numbers in the description so you can actually find that specific person. And obviously in between, I'm going to let you know who that person is and a really, really, really brief description of their vocation or their profession. So that you can find them. Also, obviously, leave any links to their works in the description as well, so that you can, if you need to contact them or you want to get in touch with them, find out more information, you can do that as well. You can get those previous episodes via danielle.co.uk, where, you know, you can get the links to all of my social media, to YouTube, and like I said, catch up on those previous episodes. Now, something a little bit different as well today is I am going to be giving you, for the soundtrack, as well as being your host for this podcast, I am also a professional singer, songwriter of conscious reggae music. So I thought we'd do something different. And for all of the songs today, they're going to be my original works. So I really do hope you enjoy them. We're going to start off with my first song, which is called Getting Red. Here we go.
So red, so red, so red, I'm losing it. So red, so red, so red, I'm losing it. So red, so red, so red, so red, so red. I'm getting red now. I lie, you will tell me every damn day. Don't even know. Every damn day, don't even know how you can.
I hope you enjoyed that. That was written well before all of these things started. So, but you know how songs evolve and do their own thing. Yeah, that's all I'm saying on that. So we're going to start off. I've decided to kind of split this episode into three sections. So we're going to start off with this section, more to do with mental health. Later on, we're going to talk about physical health, things that you can eat and do for yourself to make sure you're physically well. And then nearer the end, we're going to get into business and money a little bit more. So they're the main things I know that at the forefront of people's minds during these kind of times is your mental well-being, your physical health, and obviously money issues, money worries, and how to get yourself out of those issues. So those are the three that I kind of wanted to focus on as your survival kit. Now, the sound quality may fluctuate between these snippets of the interviews, as when I was starting out, I had specific equipment and then, you know, had to upgrade as things have gone through. And obviously, as we're doing these interviews over the phone, as lockdown came in, you know, it depends on the sound quality of the particular phone we're using. So don't watch that. Just make sure you get the content. That's the whole purpose of this episode. So in this first section of the episode, like I said, we're going to cover mental health. So like I said earlier, all of the people that I've interviewed gave some great advice, some wonderful knowledge throughout all of these interviews. But I've just picked out like the snippets that I think would be really useful, like I said, as a collective package, as your survival kit through this lockdown. So if there's a little bit more content for a particular person, it's just because I think that it's relevant as this survival kit. But there is so much more knowledge shared in their individual episode, so please check them out. Right, we're going to get started with a little snippet from Shelley Ann Roden, who is an occupational therapist who works on an infectious diseases ward. I just wanted to touch on if you had any advice to give people for their mental well-being when going through this current isolation, you know, being in their houses, being cooped up and all the rest of it. Do you have any advice on anything that they could do?
Yeah, I was thinking about this recently because, you know, when most of the times we keep ourselves busy, so we don't actually have a time to really stop and think about life. And I feel like with this COVID, it's actually in some ways getting us to just stop. So what I would say with people is just make sure that you're looking after yourself, eating right, going out, getting fresh air. If you feel that your thoughts are becoming too much, definitely, if you can't talk to anyone, then write it down. If somebody's feeling, you know, potentially quite low, the Samaritans are normally quite good. People think that it's just for suicide, but it really isn't. It's to have somebody anonymous to talk to. And sometimes that's what we need, because in some ways, I feel like when you're around your friends know you as one way. They don't always know you as, you know, they don't see the vulnerable side. But sometimes, even through anonymity, you can able to, you know, reach out to other people and just say, this is how I'm feeling. But it's just to take this natural pause that's happening, you know, and just to take stock of everything that's going on and use your friends, speak with your friends, speak with your family, and don't suffer in silence. And try and laugh as well. Create a TikTok account or something like that. That seems to be quite popular right now. But that's what I would say. Just make sure to keep a balance, looking after yourself. If you're a person that is a praying person, if you go to church, you can't go to church. No, you can go online and watch your sermon there. If you're not a person of faith, then if you're more of a person that meditates, just make sure that you're doing that. But just try and stay grounded and turn off the news, because that can be a little bit unsettling at times. And that's probably what I would say.
Okay, so you suggest a lot of the solutions, would you say, are online then, in terms of kind of trying to trying to like find other ways to get in touch with people or different outlets, yeah, kind of thing.
Yeah, definitely. I think the main thing is to try and stay connected, because right now we're very much disconnected. I mean, that's been happening for a while now, where people are more to themselves, and especially if you live in, you know, places like here where we don't know our neighbors most of the time. This just adds that extra isolation where people might be sitting at home and thinking, wow, I am really by myself. So it's just a matter of trying to maintain that connection with people. So if you need to call somebody, you know. So that's why I made that suggestion.
So do you find it quite ironic that it has been said that social media and being online and being on your phones is quite antisocial, in the sense of when you're around people, and now it's kind of the only way to socialize?
Exactly. It is ironic. It is the thing that can make you be more socially isolated, but no, it's the thing that actually can keep you connected. So I think it's just finding the balance as well.
Definitely. And before we play your next selection, do you have any mantras that you use on a daily basis? Obviously, doing the work that you do, you must have positive words that you use for yourself to uplift yourself. Do you have any positive mantras that you might want to share with people that maybe they can use if they're waking up and feeling a bit fed up with everything that's going on?
I'm trying to think. No, do I have any positive mantras? I normally generally just say to myself, stay grounded, stay connected, stay vigilant, and see the whole person, is what I normally say. Because especially in this line of work, I find that if I'm not careful, it is just a number. Here is room for, you know, and you don't see the person. So that's my mantra, is to, because if I was to be a patient in a hospital, I would want somebody to take some interest in me as a whole person and not just as a number or as a patient, but as Shelley. So that's what I normally say to myself, just stay grounded, stay connected, and just keep it, the human level there. For myself as well, because obviously we're dealing with people who are quite unwell, and for the most part, they're at the worst part of their life, is to remember that that's still not my thing to take home. So tuning out at the end of the day and saying, well, I'm going to my home now with love. So again, just to keep it separate from my life, because if I don't do that, then when I go home, I'll be thinking about other people all the time, which isn't the best thing to do, because then I wouldn't be of any service to anyone at that point.
Definitely. And for the listeners, I suppose it's kind of it would be a thing of, well, taking a step back from things and, like you said, the news and stuff like that, and just going, just giving thanks for what they've got and the situation that they're in, rather than taking everything on board too much. So,
because at the same time, I have to be objective as well. Still have to make decisions that's going to impact their life, and you can't always make an emotional decision. It has to be one on fact as well that will be for the best good for that person, even if they don't see it that way at times.
Definitely. Some great advice there from Shelley and Rodan. Now we're going to move on to Tedric Bailey's episode. He works in the mental health service at ACCI, which stands for African Caribbean Community Initiative. Now, can you tell us more of the systems whilst going through the different stages of mental health? For example, from someone who has mild symptoms who may be searching for help, to somebody who has severe symptoms in which the family members are searching for help?
So basically, it's very hard, because when you suffer, say you're suffering with mental health problems, and you've come out now, you've spent like 20, 21 days on a secure unit and you've come out now. There's different, most African Caribbean people, the doctors say, diagnose you as schizophrenic. So most black people right now, if you ask them what their diagnosis is, it will have down schizophrenia. So
why is that?
They just think, I don't know, I just think GPs, when they're sitting in front of you, the GP sitting in front of you and you're black and you're going through a mental health episode, one thing they're probably thinking to themselves is probably cannabis induced, or is that person taking something, and they just have you down as schizophrenia. Even when it could be bipolar or anxiety or anything else, any other mental health diagnosis, but they'll always have you down as schizophrenia. And a lot of our members at ACCI, that's what they say. And they do make noise about it. They say they're not happy that that's what they're suffering, because obviously they know what they're suffering and what caused them to have a mental health episode. But the GP always has you down, and the psychiatric system has every, probably 95% of the, our people down as schizophrenia, suffering schizophrenic episodes.
Right, so could you tell us, I was talking more about, that's really interesting information, and that is good to know. Can you tell us the how schizophrenia would be described, for starters? And then I want to go back to the original question, but that's really interesting. So if you could describe that to us so that people are aware of what the description of that would be.
Okay, so suffering schizophrenia, someone suffering schizophrenia would be like, hearing voices, like a lot of people will be hearing voices, so obviously somebody, they were hearing somebody telling them to do something or just whispering. Because I've been on a lot of hearing voices courses throughout the years as well. And one thing I like what they're doing the on the course is make you kind of feel how it feels to suffer schizophrenia. So what they do, they'll sit you down in the chair facing an object and have two people whispering to you about different subjects at the same time. And these are most of the people suffering that are hearing this 24/7, even when they go to sleep, they're hearing this, and they still have to maintain a good quality of life.
Right, okay. And can you describe to us a couple of other mental illnesses that you would say are more common? And maybe that people say they're suffering with when they're being misdiagnosed.
Yeah, so there's a large range of mental health. There's like anxiety, there's depression, there's even like hoarding is seen to mental health as well. There's so much large range of mental health. And they say that every single person on this planet suffers some kind of mental health system, so some kind of mental health diagnosis. Like everybody's just like nobody's like there's not one person on the planet what doesn't have mental health. It's just how some people have it more severe than others.
Right. Going back to the original question, can you tell us more of the systems that are in place when you're going into when you're getting into mental health, like I said, rather than from somebody coming out of the mental health system, I'm talking more about going into the system, like what actually happens, what are the systems that are in place, what will generally happen.
Okay, so say if you get sections, say if you're unwell and you're out in the public causing harm to yourself or something, you'll be arrested, you'll hopefully be arrested and be taken to police station so you're safe. And then you will get assessed by a doctor, AMP worker, and if you need, you would have a social worker there. So normally there'd need to be about three doctors there to give you, to section you to send to hospital. So when you're there, they'll ask you some questions and just check certain things and just making sure that everything's, that you're healthy and stuff, and then they'll see how your mental health state is. So if you're sectioned under the Mental Health Act, you go into hospital under Section 2, and under Section 2, you're in hospital up to 28 days, and you're basically, the time in this 28 days, you're under assessment, and the doctors and nurses were assessing you on the ward, to see, when you're on medication as well, to see how you... how your body's reacting to the medication, if you feel any well. So three times a week you will have a meeting with your head nurse on the ward, two doctors, a social worker and a nurse, and they'll have a meeting. This meeting is called a tribunal. So in this meeting now, where you get to say how you feeling, your concerns, doctors will be able to tell you your progress and ask you questions, like say to you, how do you remember how you got here, what caused you to be unwell? Just ask you some simple questions. So it's just this is your moment now to voice your concerns, what you're not happy with, and ask questions to the doctors. And that's where my role will be there, because my role will be is to be right next to you and try and make sure you're getting a fair look at things and making sure your voice is heard and help you with anything you're worried about or any questions you need, and help make sure you're outside living as well and your family's all right as well. And I'll try and offer and make sure everything's in place and the right support's there for you, so when you come out of hospital, you can keep as well as you can and not end up back in hospital.
Right, okay. So what once you've been diagnosed that you can actually leave, what are the systems that are in place there? Say, well, just give an example without you guys. So what would normally be there and what do you add to what's there?
Well, if you imagine when you've been in hospital for like 28 days, your human rights has gone, so you can't leave. Basically, you can't leave to when the doctor say yes, give you the go-ahead. But what they'll do, once you're getting unwell, they'll give you leave. So they'll say to you, okay, in the meeting, the tribunal I was talking about earlier, they'll say to you, okay, we'll give you 7 hours a week to go to ACCI and come back with a staff off the ward. Or if you're well enough, they'll say, you can leave, catch the bus and go to the wellbeing centre for a few hours, then come back. So they're gradually giving you like baby steps. But if you don't improve, they can put you on section three. And section three is you're there could be over 6 months and longer. And you're basically there to when the doctors and the psychiatrists say that you're fit to leave. So we work with people what's been in hospitals for like 10 years, 15 years, even 19 years, and still can't leave.
So are there further sections from section three? Is there a section four, section five? Or does it stop at section three?
Yeah, there can be different. There's a whole different range of different sections. But with section three, it's basically you have to try and get yourself as well as possible. So when you sit in the tribunal, you've got the right support and you've got the right things put in place. And you see well yourself, because obviously the doctors and GPs asking you questions and then watching you on the ward and everything for you to come out. So it's a very, very scariest time because you feel powerless, you're afraid, you've probably lost your relationships, probably broken up. You don't even know if you're going to be housed when you come out. So it's a very scary time for someone. I try and always try and put myself in that position and think to myself, how would I feel if I ever became unwell and I was under a section, then you wouldn't know really what's going on or what's happened to make you end up there. So it's a scary time for people. It's a scary. I've seen many over the years, I've seen many men and women and young teenagers on sections, and it's just very sad. Like, and as I said, my job is to get them well and get them out there and try my best from not making them going back in the mental health hospital.
Just out of interest, is there a section where you're sectioned in such a way that you won't come out at all?
Yes, there's people in there. There's people in secure units all over the country. They've been there from over 20 years, 30 years. Some end up dying in there. And these brothers and sisters are, I would say, well enough with the right support to go back out to their communities. But you see why it is a lot of things right now. It's to do with money. And obviously when the power be has you and you're on a section, it's for them to say that you're ready to come out. So that is a scare. So basically your life is in their hands. So if they want to keep you there, they'll keep you there. A lot of brothers and sisters, when I go there and I see them on the walls under the section and I'm on the section and them shouting and cussing, them chatting patois and chatting in the African language, I have to take them aside and say to them, listen, these people want to keep you here. You have to control yourself, get well, do what they say, because you can't fight this right now. Maybe when you come out, you can fight the system, but right now, you're under this law and power. So you have to like keep yourself well, do what they say, take their medication, keep your mind active, exercise. And we're here at ACCI to support you and guide you with this journey. But just don't fight the system, because you can't and you're going to lose. There's many brothers and sisters over the years who have lost their life in mental health institutions, and like there's been roles that have come out of ACSI for people, our members who have passed away in mental health hospital. We've got a nurse what we work with now named Margaret, and her roles come about because a few years ago a brother called Fitz Francis was killed in a ward in Wolverhampton a few years ago. So yeah, it is a very scary field. Obviously I meet a lot of people every day, and some of the people I meet even from my own school. I see people on the wards and section from my own school in my class, and we're like, oh my gosh, what are you doing here? And like they're just saying to me, Ted just had a breakdown, I couldn't cope with life, it's stressful, and they've just lost it, or a bad breakup. It could be all sorts of reasons could set anybody over the edge. We all know how hard life is and how things are, like what's happening in the world now. It's very, very difficult time. Like, mental health has shot up now. Like, when things go back to normal, the referrals what we're going to be receiving is going to be, like, absolutely crazy. So, yeah, it's a very interesting role, and it's a very rewarding role as well.
So that was Tedric Bailey speaking earlier in the year about the different systems that are in place. I hope that's enlightened you. You can check out that full episode. And I will also leave the link to ACCI in case you would like to get some more advice from them. To finish off this part of the episode on mental health, we're going to finish off with some words from Sophia Morgan-Jenness, who is a psychiatric nurse and also runs her own business, Morgan-Jenness Limited, which is a company focused on health and well-being. In the lockdown that we're in, I feel that we all have to be extremely self-aware in many different aspects of our lives, whether it be, you know, in physical contact or, you know, with our mental well-being, how we plan out our time. What would you say are the precursors or warning signs that someone's mental health or well-being may be deteriorating? Because sometimes it can happen so gradually that we don't notice until it's, you know, quite far gone. What would you say, there's any warning signs to look out for? Because sometimes you can just be in a bad mood, or how do you recognise when it's becoming a problem before it becomes a big problem, is what I'm trying to get at.
Yeah, I hear you. I mean, everything is unique to the individual. So it's about knowing that person and looking for those kind of changes in that person. It might be things like the person is isolating themselves more, spending more time in their room, if they used to enjoy watching a certain television program, now it doesn't give them joy anymore. They're not laughing at your jokes, they're not engaging, they don't want to talk to you, or they're excessively sleeping or can't sleep. Do you know what I mean? It can just be a wide spectrum of things that can go on for that person. And I think sometimes it's just having that ear to listen and to be, have that confidence to ask the questions, really, is everything going all right for you? And to create a safe space where that person is able to express themselves without feeling judged. You know, people try to, with mental health, I think people try to make sense of the situation within the framework that they know. So, for example, somebody's experiencing hearing voices, for example, if they are very spiritual, they might think, oh, with this voice, I'm hearing the voice of God, or I'm hearing the voice of the devil, or I'm hearing an angel. If a person is more sci-fi and they believe in aliens, they can feel that they've been invaded by an alien person, somebody's come and invaded them. If they're more conspiracy, they could think, oh, it's the government spying on me and putting a chip in my head that I'm hearing voices. So they're using their frame of reference, and it's about trying to understand their frame of reference and working from there. And I always try and say, and I always try and do for myself, is to imagine if what they're saying is true. Just imagine in your mind what they're saying is true, and that might help you to feel the emotions that they're feeling. So somebody says, no, I can see the spider on the wall or something, and you can't see anything. You know, but just imagine, if you could see, what would be going on for you? How would you feel? And then that gives you a bit of understanding about why that person is behaving and reacting in the way they're reacting. Do you understand what I mean?
Yeah, you're walking in their shoes.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. So you try and understand, and sometimes that understanding can be an important part, you know, and it's that fear which is, makes people do something. It's a fear, but if you can offer a safe haven where people can express themselves, that's always been an advantage, whether it's going to be something like a psychotic illness or whether it's just like a depression or feeling low in mood. Sometimes we just need to feel loved and cared for, and to offer that space can be invaluable.
So what would you recommend people in lockdown do to ensure their health, their healthy mental well-being, especially those people that are in isolation? Maybe they've got some kind of illness, some physical illness already, which means that they're more isolated than, say, the average person. So maybe they can't go out and exercise and do those things that we know have, you know, such a positive impact on our mental well-being. What would you suggest for them?
I mean, there's little things that we can do. I mean, plus, people have technology now, having your phone, having like Zoom meetings and Skype video call meetings with family members like that, making those kind of links. That can be really rewarding. A lot of the different churches are doing services, Zoom services now, so that's really important. Even though you can't go outside, if you've got a garden, to open the door and have some fresh air, potter around your garden, doing some of the hobbies. If there's hobbies that you've always wanted to do, you wanted to learn a language or you wanted to learn how to crochet, this is the time to do it, to read the books that you've been meaning to read for the past 10 years. This is the time to do it, to learn to cook, to keep yourself busy and active. That can be really important as well. Do you know what I mean? And have that time for yourself to make sure that you relax in the bath, have aromatherapy, you know, those kind of things that you can do so you can pamper yourself and also make those connections in the way that you can. Write the letters that you've been meaning to write, write that book that you've been meaning to write. There's things that we haven't had time to do, and now we've got the opportunity to do it. So we've got to take advantage of that opportunity. As opposed to seeing it as being oppressive, we can see it as an opportunity to come our way.
I hope that you found all of those little snippets really helpful with the advice, letting you know the knowledge on certain systems that are in place. And like I said, you really want to check out their full episodes. You know, Shelly-Ann Roden's one, Tedric Bailey's one, and also Sophia Morgan-Jenness. You want to check out their full episodes. Like I said, any links that they have, I will be sharing in the description. But I thought that, you know, all of the guests that I'm sharing today, I feel like, and all of my guests in general, obviously, have shared so much wonderful knowledge, but I felt like it was really relevant going into the second lockdown to try and, you know, bring those little snippets together for you to try and help you out through this second lockdown. We're going to have a little music interlude as promised. Like I said, all of my original songs for you today. And I'm going to move on to Don't Fight Yourself. I feel like all of the tunes that I'm going to be playing for you that of mine today are real relevant right now. So I hope you enjoy it. Here we go with Don't Fight Yourself.
Simple, so don't complicate it. Being a follower, so overrated. So let's not debate it. It's time to face it. All you need's right in front of you. It's your choice, so choose to love yourself inside. You know the time is now. Don't fight yourself, just let go. Your destiny.
hope that lifted your vibes. I hope you felt the lyrics. Yeah, if you want to check out any of my tunes, all you need to do is to check out the official music videos as well, is go to daniil.co.uk. Some of them were shot here, some were shot in Jamaica, but if you need a little sunshine, you need to go check them out. So like I said, daniil.co.uk. I'll also leave the link for that in the description. Right, we're going to move on to the next section, which is all about your physical well-being. So this section is all about the different foods and herbs that you can use to strengthen your immune system. We also cover if you've got any pre-existing health conditions, how you can strengthen your body against the issues that you already have to make sure that you're strong going through this winter time. We're going to start off with Maxine Palmer. Now, Maxine Palmer is a dietitian and nutritionist. With covering some of the conditions that affect our community and any advice you have, you know, with regard to any nutrition, any dietary changes that people can, you know, take on board and try and work into their lifestyle. So could we please start off with diabetes?
So diabetes, it's going to be more about food. Cut down on your starchy foods, yam, banana, dumpling, rice. I know we love them. I love them as well. But just cut them by half. Cut the amount you have on the plate by half. Quarter plate of those foods. Those foods are damaging our health. They're leading to excess weight gain. That is my advice for diabetes, the one thing I'd like to take home.
Okay, heart conditions?
Heart health is all about your good fats. It's about weight gain as well, but you've already got that advice for diabetes. So I'll take the diabetes advice and add on to that healthy fats. Omega-3s, let's think salmon, mackerel, sardines, that food group, pilchards, herrings, those are full of omega-3 fats. There's plant-based ones as well, but choose at least two of those types of oily fishes every week.
Sickle cell?
So sickle cell, ooh, that's a good one. I'd say just eating a rainbow of fruits and vegetables, keeping your immune system as healthy as possible. There's not really food-based advice I can give you for the pain and symptoms you're going to have with sickle cell. So all I can advise is that you keep yourself generally healthy. Keep your kidneys healthy as well, as kidney problems can result from having sickle cell. Drinking plenty of fluids every day, avoiding caffeine as much as you can, just to keep your kidneys healthy.
Mental illness in general. I know this is a hard one because mental illness isn't general, but, you know, any particular foods that might help with that?
See, I don't think mental health is related to, is multifactorial. There's more than one thing that's going to influence somebody having mental health problems. But just trying to prevent it with food alone is not going to work. For depression, there's foods that can boost your mood. Definitely higher intakes of fruits and vegetables have been proven to boost your mood. Bananas have got a nutrient in there which is definitely linked to increased mood boosting. It boosts your mood hormone. So having a banana a day then.
So are there any that you would like to add to that?
Yes, let me think. So in our community, I'm going to choose high blood pressure, just because I think that is really common. And it's going to be similar to diabetes in a way. So with high blood pressure, it's just cutting down your salt intake. Please cut down our salt intake. There's ways that we can still get that same flavour out of foods with cutting down your salt by half. So try to cut your salt by half. That's one thing. Add less salt into the cooking. Don't add salt at the table. And actually, surprisingly, adding lemon juice. So add a bit of salt, add lemon juice and garlic to your food can give about that. It can enhance it in flavours the same way that salt can. So just replacing some of your salt with lemon juice and garlic for high blood pressure.
Some great advice there from Maxine Palmer. I'm going to leave the links to her works in the description. So if you wanted a more individual consultation, then you can get in touch with her. We're going to move on to another one of my previous guests. We're going to move on to Jay McCoy, who is co-owner of Kingdom Health and Fitness. And he's going to be telling us a bit about some of the different herbs and some of the different things that you can do to strengthen your immune system as a whole. Your body is your temple. So anyone who fully understands, or should I say overstands, this will also overstand that food is medicine. Correct. Your journey, what foods would you say are true to this way of thinking?
Cannabis oil, black seed oil, and merengue.
Can you tell us the benefits of those?
Well, black seed oil is the one... cannabis and black seed, probably the most spoke about. Black seed for literally curing everything apart from death. And cannabis literally healing every sort of pain. And I think is key, I call it head office, because it's a receptor, so it connects to the brain and it identifies all those sort of your pain receptors in every part of the body. And I think that's truly amazing. Truly, truly amazing. That's perhaps why there's so much money involved, especially in America right now on the stock market, that that are looking into it. And I've now said, a recent document has come out that they're saying that cannabis is one of the key components to eliminating the COVID-19.
Okay, tell us more about that.
They have done experiments with full spectrum CBD, cannabis oil, and again, it's down to the extraction process. So if you look at the continents where the earth is more fertile, you'll find the potency of the actual cannabis oil. So you're looking at Gambia, Ghana, Mozambique, Congo, Australia, which is actually our original continent as well. They have found that the CBD, once consumed orally, when by the time it hits the immune system, it is a protector cell, and it creates the body to become alkaline, as it all the foods that are to our native country, they're alkaline. As the late Dr. Sebi had said, no virus can live in an alkaline body.
Wow. Wow, we are actually going to get onto alkaline foods in just a moment. But I want to go back to one of the oils that you mentioned earlier, which is merengue oil, because you didn't tell us the benefits of that. Can you tell us that, please?
Merengue oil powder, again, it is high density protein. It's very, very good for cholesterol. It's very, very good, also good for weight loss. It is good for both men and for women. It also helps balance your serotonin and melatonin level. They all do, but I think merengue and CBD are more equal, or they have a very good comparison between the two in helping sleep, which is vital. And again, they also help endorse the body to become very, very alkaline, which is key for us to eradicate the multitude of illnesses that we seem to suffer with.
Okay, can you share a little bit more knowledge on any herbs that you might be aware of that other people might not be? They might be native to Jamaica or Africa, or, you know, there might just be herbs that you know about that you think people should know more about.
There's so many. Herbs. Nomi fruit comes to mind, or noni fruit, depending on the pronunciation.
What's that good for? What is that?
Again, it's a very unusual looking fruit. It looks partly like an overgrown grape, but it's packed with amino acids, B11, B2, D3, calcium. Great for energy. It's just got a multitude of enemies. It's great for liver. Fantastic for liver. It's a good immune booster as well, and it does help with cognition. If you were looking to consider the colon cleanse, which I think we should all do. I think Nomi fruit's fantastic, and it's quite a sweet tasting fruit as well. So I know a lot of the herbs are quite pungent in taste, and we find it difficult to consume, like black seed oil. It's that's a difficult one. Great benefit, but it's not the best tasting. So there's Nomi fruit. Also, I would say a Acelera cherry, which I think is 6,000 times more powerful or potent than vitamin C. Again, energy, high cholesterol, liver, blood pressure, diabetes, fantastic. What else is there out there? Rhodiola is fantastic as a root. I'm not sure if people are aware of rhodiola. It is a root native to Persia, West Africa. Fantastic for energy, great for cell regeneration, body mass, calcium, packed with protein, and very, very good as a stabilizer for heart condition.
Okay, can you tell us where the other two are native to?
Nomi fruit is Gambia, Ghana, also can be found in Peru. And Acelera cherry, you can pick that one up closer to, I think you can actually get it in Jamaica as well. That you can pick that up from there, and also in Australia.
So I hope that's been helpful to your, you know, what you want to be putting into your body during this winter season to make yourself strong, to strengthen your immune system. Like I said earlier, you want to make sure you check out their full episodes. So Maxine Palmer and Jay McCoy, you want to check out their full episodes because there is a wealth of knowledge there, trust me. Right, we're going to move on to the next selection. So next piece of reggae music for you, which is called Bless My Soul. So you want to check out the music video for this. This is the one that was shot in Jamaica. So if you're feeling a bit chilly right now, like I said earlier, if you go to danil.co.uk, you can check out the official music video for this and warm right up. Here we go with Bless My Soul. This is dedicated to, well, you know who you are.
Your love, your vibes, show me
I hope you enjoyed Bless My Soul. We're going to move on to the final section of this Lockdown 2.0 Survival Kit Reggae Uprising podcast special. Yeah. As promised, we're going to focus on finances, money. We're talking budgets, we're talking, you know, books that you can read, things that you can look into in terms of your finances and money. Like I said, as with all of these little snippets of episodes, they were, you know, the start of the year when we had the original first lockdown. So I hope you appreciate these little snippets of knowledge. This one is courtesy of Marisha Stevenson, an award-winning entrepreneur. So what would you say are the most important practices that people should do on a daily, weekly or monthly basis, kind of get into training for? What would you say are the best practices for financial stability? Whether for example, it might be budgeting. You might have some other examples. I don't know.
Yeah, I would say a few things. So budgeting is one, but I think the important thing with budgeting is don't bury your head in the sand and look at it. So even if it's once a month, even if it's once a quarter, where you stop and you look, what am I spending in different areas? And is there any way I can make a saving or get some kind of cut in whatever I'm doing? Go for it and do it. Do you know what I mean? I think the other thing I would suggest is getting into the habit of investment. And you can start off investment with penny stocks. You know, not everything is about, I've got to have thousands and thousands of pounds to invest. And using, you know, small investment apps like Moneybox, for example, I think is a really good way of training yourself to be in a space of investing. I think what Corona and what's going on at the moment has demonstrated is the importance of an emergency fund. And people need to recognize the difference between having savings and having an emergency fund, because they're two different things. Having savings is lovely, but actually your emergency fund should be 6 months of monthly expenses. Right now, people are in debt after 1 month of not being paid. And the reality of the matter is that what we're going to see happen next after this health crisis is out of the way is we're going to be in a recession, and we're going to be in a deep one. And a recession is where the economy contracts and effectively gets smaller. And why this recession is going to be so deep is because this is the first time in modern history that governments all around the world have had to effectively manufacture money that doesn't really exist in order to prop people up. And the reason why they're doing that is because we are so indebted that actually, if they allow us to completely collapse, we may never recover. And there are too many constructs which are based on the parameters of a society generating money. I'll put it like that. So right now, there are going to be people who might just be getting through on the skin of their teeth. There are going to be people who are furloughed and thinking, okay, you know, that'll help me get through. But by the end of this, they're going to be in more debt. That means it's going to be much more inevitable that they're likely to default on that debt. And we're going to start to see all sorts of repercussions as a response to that, whether it's businesses closing, whether it's houses being repossessed, there's going to be a massive fallout. So if there is anything for people to learn from this situation, is that if you have nothing else, build up an emergency fund. When you have your emergency fund in place, then you start thinking about your savings. And when you've got some savings in place, then you start focusing on investment. And investment is about getting your money to work for you instead of you being focused on working for your money, because your money will not give you anything back once it's gone. However, if it's in a position where it's working for you, you will benefit from it. And you may not benefit from it much now, but that's where compound interest becomes the eighth wonder of the world, because as time goes by, your benefits will increase.
Are there any books, we were just talking about knowledge, are there any books that you read that you found really helpful when you started your journey or during your journey or even now that you would recommend?
Plethora.
Okay, give us a top three. Give us a top three.
I would say Think and Grow Rich is a very popular one. And I think what that is about is it just gives people an insight into the mindset of, you know, as I say, thinking and growing rich, as it were. Very popular book. Dale Carnegie has written that book. Then Rich Dad, Poor Dad is another good one, because that, again, just... It, you know, it just uses the examples of one guy who said, I had a rich dad and I had a poor dad. One was his stepdad, one was his biological father. But he just explains the different lessons that he learned from those two fathers and how it shaped him in terms of his understanding of getting money to work for you. And actually, the third one, actually, and it's a very personal book to me. I don't know how many people would enjoy it, but I just remember it made a lot of sense to me. And it's called How to Be a Money Magnet. And again, that's a book I originally read now about a decade ago. Still have it on my bookshelf. Every so often have a little thumb through it. But again, it just talks about our relationship with money. And I think a lot of people don't necessarily understand that that's a real, it's a starting point. But the very first question to ask yourself is, what is your relationship with money? Because just like any other relationship, it's a relationship that needs to be understood and nurtured. And I don't always think that as individuals we think that way. So for example, I'm very clear on what my financial personality is, and that actually shapes a lot of the way that I go about things. So for example, I am a spender. I don't think there is any amount of money that somebody could give me that I couldn't find a way to spend. Not possible. And I could spend it fast.
Wow. Okay.
I mean, right now, even if someone said to me today, I'm going to give you £1 million, I'm giving you one day to spend that £1 million. Listen, it's done by tonight, I promise you.
Down to the penny.
I'd probably find myself in a position where I want to spend a million. And an extra £100,000, thinking, oh Lord, I've run out of money. I've got no problem when it comes to spending money. It's almost like it's in my DNA. So because I understand that characteristic about myself, and I know that I'm a spender by nature, I'll give you a very good example, something I don't do. I don't window shop, ever.
Oh, you just don't put the temptation there. Is that what it is?
Exactly, because window shopping for a spender is shopping. It's not window shopping. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
The only time I'm going to go to the shop and come back with nothing is when I can't find what I wanted.
Mm-mm.
Do you get what I'm saying? But that's my personality, and I know that about myself. You know, some people are a bit more of a Scrooge, and I'm not even saying that to be disrespectful. That's literally what they call it. And if you have a Scrooge personality, obviously you're much more likely to hold on to your money. Do you know what I mean? But why that's important for you to understand is it feeds into a lot of things. So, for example, it's not necessarily good for two spenders to be in a relationship. They can easily go bankrupt.
Of course, yeah.
Because they're just both spending. Whereas you put a spender with a Scrooge, and actually you'll find that they may start to meet a little bit in the middle.
Yeah, yeah. Balance, you know, each other out. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, so... like I say, that book for me made me think about that. It made me think about what's my relationship with money and what is my financial personality. And when you start to understand what those factors are, it allows you to construct your habits in a certain way. So, you know, I know that if I go to any, let's say, popular online retail store, I am likely to walk away with stuff, and I'm not that chick who can buy one item. You know, I'm going to be £200 deep in that basket before I go, yo, what's in the basket? Do you know what I mean? Before I've even thought about it, I'm that person who
gets to the checkout and then goes, oh, by the way, how much is this? That's my personality. So because I understand those things about myself, I construct certain things in my life in order to create a checking mechanism, for example. So, you know, it sounds silly, but I will take any kind of significant purchase, I will actually force myself to consider for, say, a week.
Right.
You know, and why? Because I know I'm impulse-led. If I forget that I wanted to buy it, then I know that I didn't really want it. But if I can't forget that I want it, then I'm like, okay, I do need to find a way to sort that out. So, you know, it's just little things like that. But when you get to understand it, and some of these books help you to just think those things through.
Some great energy, some great advice there from Marisha Stevenson. Like I said, with all of the guests that have links to share, please check out her links in the description also if you want to get in touch with her, collaborate with her, or just check out her works. Now, we're going to finish off this section, so this financial section of this Lockdown 2.0 Survival Kit Reggae Uprising podcast special with Zandela Seka. Now, this woman has multiple businesses, and I thought this would be really good to share for people that are starting up businesses in a really uncertain year. And for maybe those, to give a bit of inspiration for people that already had businesses and to kind of rejuvenate. And there's a couple jokes in there too. So to put a smile on your face to finish off this special. Wow. With so much success with your businesses, what can you let us in on any of the secrets? Can you share any of them? Just a little tiny bit?
I think that people mysteriously think that there is secrets to success, but there isn't. And I think that success is in plain sight. It is right there in front of you. And all you have to do is always be solution focused. So look at a problem and figure out, can I fix that problem and how can I fix it? What can I do to fix that problem? And then you become a solution. And people always want solution-based companies, whether it's communication, whether it's food, you know, simple, easy ways to get food like delivery services, communication like the internet or mobile phones. Solution-based companies always do very well. So from a very young age, I've looked at things in a solution way rather than looking at the problem. So I don't think that there's many secrets to success. I think they are there, and there is absolutely no problem in looking at other people's success and saying, I want to do that. And I offer business mentoring to people, and I always say to them, if you are successful, then share your success, because there's always room at the bottom of the ladder. Because if you are successful, especially in the Black community, and you hide your success, or your success only benefits a community that is not yours, then you are not doing right by your community. So if you are climbing the success ladder, always continue to climb and make room for other people to come up that ladder with you. I think that there's no secrets to success.
Okay, but you were talking about problems and your mentoring that you do with people that are trying to get into business. So what would you say are the three top problems that you're presented with by them?
So the three top problems, I think there's two main problems. So the first two are time and money. So a lot of people from our background, Black people, they don't have the time, because the only way, time is money at the end of the day, and the only way that you can have more freedom of your time is if you have the financial stability to do so. So a lot of people are working 9 to 5, probably even more hours. A lot of people that come to me and have great business ideas are normally parents. So when they finish their job, then they have their other job, and that's taking care of their children. But they don't have the time, and they also lack the capital. A lot of people don't know where to get capital from, or don't have, you know, family members or relatives who can help them with that startup capital. And I also think that another thing is mentorship. And we as a Black community, we look at other people who are successful. We see them and we think that we can do it, but they don't look like us. So it immediately makes us think that if not, we're not capable of doing it, and that we're not, it's not something that is possible for us to achieve because that person doesn't look like us. I think it is our duty, if we are successful, to be accessible to people who want to become successful. So time, money, and mentorship, basically, are the three things that stop people that look like you or I from taking that business idea to an actual project that is successful.
Wow, wow. What an amazing answer to that question. I couldn't have put it any better myself. But in terms of, I know that you said earlier you've gone through, you know, a lot of adversity and a lot of maybe doors being closed, or being hard to get to the point that you are now. So did you have any phrases or mantras that you used in these times to kind of uplift and rejuvenate you in your determination?
I didn't really have that mindset back then where I used mantras or I felt spiritually connected or anything like that. Now I would say I have my focus that I do in the morning and my routines and my rituals. But back then, no, I wouldn't say that I had. But what we used to do back in the day is we realized that people trusted companies that presented a lot bigger than they actually were. So my friend and I used to play a very silly trick. Well, not really a trick, but we used to have this thing. If someone called up and they had like an invoice query, we would say, can you just hold the line 1 second? I'm just going to put you through to the credit control department. We didn't have a credit control department. It was just my friend. It was just me and my friend. Or we would say, we'll put you through to the recruitment officer, or we'll put you through to whoever. And I'd be like, can you pretend to be the recruitment officer? Or we'll put you through to the complaints team, because people actually trust a business that presents a lot more seasoned and a lot bigger than it actually is. If they knew that it was just the two of us, that people probably would go, no, I don't trust that, it's only two people. Mm. And when we went to our very first conference, I think there was about 350 people. Our biggest competition, that was a company that had been going on for 10 years before us, but we were getting a lot of their referrals. And I remember the brain injury manager coming up to us and going, is it just you two that run the company? And we're like, yeah. And we ended up talking to him for hours and hours. He ended up coming and working for us for a little while.
Wow.
But he was absolutely shocked. They had 57 members of staff and it was just us. And we were doing like about 15 referrals back then. And he was totally gobsmacked that there was only two of us, but we were working like 18-hour days to make it happen.
Oh my God.
But yeah, it was good. It was interesting.
Wow. So you two were doing the work of 57 people, basically.
I wouldn't say 57, but definitely the work of 10 different departments, for sure.
Wow. Wow. If that doesn't inspire you, I don't know what will. I hope you've enjoyed this week's episode. Like I said, this is your survival kit. So whenever you're feeling a bit low, whenever you're thinking, oh, I don't know what to do, or just play this. And, you know, like I said, it will uplift you, whether it needs to be mentally, whether it needs to be, you know, physical ideas of what to do. And then if you're having any money worries or troubles, like I said, you can look at those specific sections and go, okay, that was the person who was talking on finances. That was the person that was talking on mental health. That was the person that was talking about specific foods that I need to eat. And then you can actually zone into their specific episode and find out more information that's relevant to you at that time. Like I said, throughout the episode, I will leave all of their links in the description so that you can check out their works and their actual episode. I hope you've enjoyed it. I hope it has helped. And I wish you so, so, so much love, especially in these times. Yeah. And I hope you're feeling all of my high vibrations out there. I'm going to leave you with my final original tune. It's not strictly reggae, as it's an acoustic version of one of my songs, and it's called Walk the Walk. It's more about the lyrical content. As you know, with all of my songs, I'm saying something. So I'm just going to play a little snippet. And like I said, and I always say, have a wonderful week. As always, blessed love. Test me.